Michael Meets is a podcast interviewing people about their life, work, their interests and aspirations. Many thanks to everyone who listened to last week's podcast with Josie Sheehan. I've passed on all your wonderful comments and goodwill to Josie.
Do you know someone I should meet? Do you know someone that's a good talker? Their story doesn't have to sound interesting to them or to you. I firmly believe that we all have an interesting story to tell. If so, contact hello@michaelmeets.com. That's hello@michaelmeets.com.
This week, I speak to Martin Flynn. Martin talks about his early childhood, starting work at the age of 9, the teacher he hated, his relationship with his mother, grandmother, and religion, and about being a lifelong Republican. The year was 1951, the year that Éamon de Valera became the Taoiseach of Ireland with one of the smallest Dáil majorities on record, the year he also visited Newry for the first time since his arrest there in 1924, and the Abbey Theatre in Dublin burnt to the ground and did not reopen again until 1966. Elsewhere in the world, Walt Disney's 13th animated film, Alice in Wonderland, premiered in London, and the BBC radio drama production, The Archers, commenced and still runs to this day. Also in that year, Ian Paisley founded the Free Presbyterian Church of Ulster in County Down, on St Patrick's Day I might add, and Nat King Cole topped the charts with Too Young. It was also the year that Martin Flynn was born, in the city of Belfast.
Our upbringing in this would have been rough. It wasn't very easy, so it wasn't. Because in this family here, there was my mum had a big family. There was 13 of us, and one died. Yeah, our brother called Liam, and he died when he was 2. But my dad had worked a lot away from home in England and stuff like that there, so mum got it really hard, so she did. And when I was young, growing up, I would have went from the house and went down in the Eastwood Scrapyard, which is now where Sainsbury's, or not Sainsbury's, Asda is, that complex around Asda is. And I would have went into that scrapyard there, and you would have got wood and stuff like that there, and chopped the wood up. And I would have made bundles of sticks and used old bits of string that you'd have got around the scrapyard. Yeah. And I would have put all the sticks in a bag and carried them over my shoulder, and I would have went around the door selling them and bringing money in to give to mum.
What age were you?
So it was. Then I would have been about maybe 9. I always can remember I've always done something from when I was very young. I was always worked. I also, when I was doing that, I also got up in the mornings, and I worked for I used to deliver milk in the mornings. Mm. I used to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning before I went to school, and went up to or went down the Glen Road. Used to meet the milkman down at the bottom of the Glen Road. They were called McCaulfields. They owned the big farm up the top of the Springfield Road where the Alverna Hotel used to be before the Troubles. It was also turned into a British Army base. So I would have been up in the morning, so they would have picked me up. And then during the winter time, I would have been up and give them a hand, milking the cows in the bar and stuff like that there, and doing wee odd jobs around the farm as well. I would also have went up and give them a hand during the summertime. Doing the hay and stuff like that there. They would also used to bring the cows that were calving, were ready for calving. They used to bring them out to the fields in Poglas before Poglas was built. Turf Lodge wasn't even built then at the time, by the way. And then in 1963, I remember when I was delivering the milk, I got up one morning and I opened the door and it was the heaviest snow that I could ever remember, ever, even to this day. I remember opening the door and the snow falling in. So that day, I went out and actually walked my way from my house up through the fields and turf lodge, part of the fields and turf lodge, and into that farm. And they couldn't get out that day with the milk. And then the next day, Bran was able to get out with the lorry down the white track, and he came up round, and I remember delivering the milk with a rope round my waist and pulling some of the crates of milk along to deliver milk to people's houses. Is this all been recorded?
Yes,
oh, recorded. I thought.
So once I clarified with Martin that the recording had started and he'd started to share his life story, I continued to ask him about what other jobs he had.
And I also had a paper around That I would have got up in the mornings and done the papers for Murray's shop on the Anderson's Town Road.
Yeah.
I used to do that around Moorland Park, Stockmans, and up around Fruithill, and then parts of Anderson's Town here, Dunmusk, and stuff like that. I did that for a while. And then there's a man used to call here, a Protestant fella called Freddie Crawford, I'll never forget it. And he came from Tates Avenue. So he did. But he originally came from Tates Avenue, but he lived down the Shore Road. And I remember when I was going to school, I would have jumped on a bus, what you call a trolley bus, at the top of just outside St. Teresa's School. And I would have got a trolley bus into the town and then another one down the Shore Road to where he lived in the prefabs, down facing Mount Vernon, believe it or not. So, but I would have been down there and after school, and Freddie would have got, he would have went around collecting wood from old wood yards and stuff like that, or old machine places that done carpentry and stuff like that there. But he had a saw in the back of one of his rooms in the old prefab, and he would cut all the blocks up, cut them into sticks. And it was the first time ever that I seen, he would have used old bicycle tubes for elastics, right, for anything. He used to take the bicycle tubes and cut them up with a pair of scissors, and you elasticated the things around. And you'd have went, I would have been during the winter time, you'd have been selling the likes of sticks and stuff like that there. He used to fill his big lorry, and I would have been out with them around different parts, the Shankill, believe it or not, the Crumlin Road, parts of Andy Town and stuff like that. He went all over the place selling sticks. That was in the winter time. Yeah. And then when it came to like the spring, he'd have went and he'd have got daffodils and tulips, and we went around all the doors selling daffodils and tulips. Yeah. This would have been at the weekends and after school. Daffodils and tulips. And then when it came to the summertime, it was apples, pears and tomatoes. He'd have sold stuff like that.
Season,
yeah. And then 1 year after that there, then he started to do paraffin as well. So it was out doing, we were doing paraffin sticks in the winter time. Selling paraffin and sticks in the winter time. That lasted for, God, I don't know how many years it was. He was the loveliest fella anyway. But then something happened, and I think somebody said something about him or whatever. Yeah. And I think he got into a wee bit of bar. I don't know what the crack was over it anyway. But anyway, that was the end. That was the end of.
How much would you been earning then?
God, when I was doing the milk. God, what was it? I used to get the milk. They would have given me, you'd have got 10 shillings, right? So you'd have brought the 10 shillings home to mum.
Yeah.
And mum would have given me a shilling off it. And mum kept the rest, because mum needed it to feed the family.
When I was talking to Martin, he was telling me about his father and his older brothers going to England to work to earn some money to send back home to look after the rest of the family.
And I was also curious what it was like to live with 12 other siblings.
Everybody,
well, used to get three at the top and four at the bottom in the boys' room, because mum and dad, mum had her room,
yeah,
and then all the girls were in the other room. And the same name days, you know, where people have double glazed in the day, it was only single stuff then. Yeah. And you know, I laugh, I say my kids today about, you know, they talk about the frost and the snow. Uh-huh. Since the frost wasn't, never mind then, outside the windows, the rest was inside the windows, you know. And you see then, like, you didn't have what you have now.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Clothes wise and everything. Do you know, like, my mum had to really scrub and straight the feed and clothe us and really to look after. It was really hard. And, like, we all got hand-me-downs. We didn't get, you know, people, you didn't go out to shops and buy a pair of trousers or a pair of shoes. Like, when you had them, that was what you were wearing for every weeks and then and stuff like that. And that was one of the things that I really hated when we were growing up, you know, because, you see, when you went to school, you didn't have what other kids had. And they made you feel, some of them used to make you feel as if you were a nobody. Mm. Like, you know, that's why I can relate to people that are outcasts or down and out.
Yeah.
You know, because when we were kids growing up, like, we didn't have anything, and some of the things you got said, tell you some of the, you know, and even just say, like, see, to be honest, in your mind, I sort of look back on that there, like, even the primary school, you know, when you look back at primary school, and you've seen the teachers there, and she would have looked after people from some Merrill Park, or people who live in the big houses in Grantia, and Fruithill Park was a prime example of it, you know. there was a teacher around there called Evelyn. I still remember to this day. She was my, I hated her.
Yeah.
I hated her. She made a difference in people. It was one of the things, and I remember getting a waltz over, you know. We just didn't have what we had. You just come and say, look at the state of you, blah, 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 this, that, and the other thing.
Yeah, she'd have said that to you, like your teacher.
Yeah, she would have said that. And she made you really feel as if you were, and but you had her favourites, you know. Like there was people who were around her. I know their names. I'm not going to mention it here.
Fair enough.
You know, because I wouldn't think. But she would have had them as up because they were her neighbours, friends, and or these other people are well to do in Glenhill and Crunchy and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I'm not griping about it. All I'm saying is that this was just part of. What it was like to grow up.
Five interviews in, only three of which have been broadcast, it's quite evident the role that grandmothers play in Ireland in raising their grandchildren. Here Martin explains the role his grandmother played in helping to raise him.
My grandmother reared me for a couple of years down in St. James's while my mum wasn't well.
Right.
So I had this difficult relationship working between my mum and my gran, who was real my mum.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean, because my gran had brought me up for a lot of years, so... when I was growing up, when my grandma was rearing me right, and then my mum came and obviously took me back as because I was her child.
Mm.
But I always looked at my grandmother as my mother.
Right.
So what happened was that caused me problems too. Psychologically, that was a big thing, because I would have always went down to my grandmother's every weekend.
Mm.
And during the summer holidays, some of my holidays, I'd have been down there maybe for a week or two.
Yeah,
to stay with her, you know, things like that. Or if she went away, she say for instance, she went away to Malay or something like that. I would have been along there and stuff like that. But I always had that bond with my gran. I didn't really have the same bond with my mum.
Mm.
I don't know whether it's fair to say that or not, but that's just the way I've grown up. But you were cut, or sort of way, caught between the two. You know, but I always more or less looked as my grandmother, really as my mother.
Yeah.
I only really got really close to my mum when my marriage broke up, and I was living up in Ramon and Rosnarine Flats. When my mum was rearing her once later on, some of the younger ones then, it was during the start of the troubles, and they were all older, they weren't babies then, but she was having a lot of problems, and she didn't know how to deal with it and stuff like that. So she asked me to go back to live with her here.
Right.
And I came back to live with her. I had to sort some of them out, as you say, as the older one of the family, because one of the eldest brothers, he went away to Australia. The other one was actually Michael was in jail at the time, so he was, but a couple of the other ones were things. So we got that all sorted out, and then I started to feel. When my mum started telling me the stories about how ill she was and stuff like that, then I started to feel guilty of not loving her as the mother that she should have been to me. But then I understood, then I started to understand, and that brought me back to, I think me and my mum got very close before she died. Me and her got a really, really close and a great bond.
Yeah.
Whereas when my granny Flynn was down and she was in a Musgrave, because she was like my mother, I found it very difficult to go and see her, watch her down. Can you understand that?
Because
I think I was losing something and I didn't want to see it going that way. You know, and so that gave me hang-ups about life.
I think it's important to acknowledge that in this podcast, when I speak to someone from the north of Ireland, you can bet your life the troubles will be mentioned, as it's part of the fabric of the landscape and society. And I'm not sure there is one family whom the troubles didn't touch. People, whether you like it or not, identify themselves with their culture and which side of the political divide they're on at an early age, even to this day, 20 years after relative peace. Here Martin tells us his first inductions into republicanism by his Protestant grandmother.
My grandma was a Protestant. Our family were Protestant, but she was always very Irish history inspired, and she used to say to me, "Well, I don't care about your Massey or English. See, as long as you learn your Irish history." That's the main thing. You learn your Irish history and you'll do me.
Yeah.
And that was my grand. My mum said he was a thing, you know. And I used to get some crack for it. But she loved anything to do with Ireland and republicanism and stuff. She was a real republican, like, so she was.
The first major riots of the current Troubles happened in 1964, when police tried to remove a tricolour flag from the Sinn Féin office on Divis Street. It was also the year that Martin attended his first Republican parade.
And that year was the year that I first went to my first Republican parade.
Yeah.
And it was in Edentober, down at the border. And I remember travelling down on a bus, and my parents didn't know anything about this year. And travelling down the bus that morning, but I can remember there was a policeman, and you call it, I think he was a branchman, and you called him Ned McKedden, and he's from Lisburn. But I remember before the bus had left, at the top, it was the shops, or not the shops, but up at the bus terminus at St. Teresa's, I'd say St. Teresa's School, and I remember getting on the bus there, and they'll not be afraid of this. There was Jimmy O'Neill, Henry O'Neill, his daddy, and I think the McGees, I'm not too sure where some of the Watsons was there, and I just can't remember. These were all neighbours of me.
Yeah.
But there was only about a handful of them around here who were Republicans. But I remember going on that. But anyway, we got on the bus. But I remember before the bus went, the cops came and the branch man, he got out and got on the bus, and he started warning everybody about there better not be any of this Republican stuff on the bus, or waving flags, you know, no going down and all this here. So I remember travelling to Edentober, and we went to the parade anyway, and it was a real cold, and it was a November's day, it was really, really cold, so it was. And that was my first experience of, I think I was 63 or 62, round about that time, anyway. But, and I remember going to the parade anyway, and marching up the hill, and it was all over around tree, and there was five people that were blew up at the border during the border campaign of 1956-62. So the border campaign had just been over.
Yeah.
So it must have been around about 64.
Right.
Because that's when the elections was fought. And the elections, so it was around 64. But I remember going and I was with Jimmy O'Neill, but then you weren't allowed in the bars and stuff like that there. So all of the older ones, the bus went back to Dundalk. So we had to walk around and in and out shops and going to the chippy and sitting and have a chip and stuff like that, and waiting and everybody coming home. My mum and dad didn't know I was away. I remember coming home, well, it was late coming home that night, but I remember when we got on the bus in Dundalk, right, and we're heading to the border, and before we got to the border, everybody says, right, if there's any United Irishmen papers or anything, like that on you, you know, get rid of it here, because these boys are going to get on the thing at the border. Mm. And search the bus, and that's true to form. Gets up to the border, having all the papers and all out, you know. They weren't allowed even to have a United Irishman paper then.
Yeah.
No way you can go into the shop now and you can buy a fublock and any Republican paper that you really want.
Mm.
Then you weren't allowed anything out there. You weren't even allowed Easter Lilies or anything on that thing. So we get up the border anyway, and right enough as the cops get on, it starts, you know, thing. So I was sitting there, everything clear, let go. So we were back home anyway, and what happened was, our lights was out or something like that, I remember, but there was a spout at the back of our, we had like a canopy, like them canopies over there, across the road there, right? But the spout run up the back of it. And I remember the girls were in the front room. And I could see the window. And our dirty will tell you this day, as my sister, she lives just up the road here. And I remember climbing up the spit on top of the canopy trying to get in the wind. And the next thing, our dirty let out a big squeal. And I fell down the spit. Went back down the spit again. And the next thing, my dad opened the door and trailed me and beat that crap out. Beat that crap out of me. Where were you? I was away from friends. And I was only young then. Like, I was still at school then.
Yeah. You know?
So young. My dad murdered me, so he did. Absolutely murdered me.
Yeah.
But then that never really stopped me.
In Ireland today, the country is preparing for the centenary anniversary of the 1916 Easter Rising. At the age of 15, Martin had a behind-the-scenes view of the 50th anniversary commemorations in Belfast in 1966.
During the 50th anniversary of the Easter Rising, Mrs. O'Neill was doing the bunting for the flagpoles, her and Mrs. McFall. Uh-huh. That's Bram McFall's mum, who plays her in front of them. they were making the bunting for along the Falls Road. But they had a big pageant and encasement, and Jimmy Rowe was more or less involved in a lot of that there.
Yeah.
And I had him in and out of casement all the time, no climbing over it and stuff like that there, and Jimmy got in, he'd beat the shit out of you. But then we became friends, and then during the pageant, or when the pageant was thing, there was me and a few other people went in and give him a hand. Then again, still a kid, and done all the props and the things for the staging. There was a big, for that week, the 5th anniversary Easter raising, there was actually a parade from Hamill Street right up to Casement Park. Did the big wolf hounds and all at the front of the thing, and all the Republicans came from all over the place. It was a really big, big thing. Uh-huh. So the pageant was on in Casement, right, during that year, and what happened was it started to snow, and the pageant was sort of way held back, and there was but anyway, the pageant eventually took place. It was beautiful. They brought the Irish Volunteer uniforms, the Irish Citizens Army, common law and stuff, all that stuff came up from Dublin. And the pageant took place, the thing. And I was there the whole time working and involved in it all with certain people. And at the end of it all, the Dubliners played at the end of it, so they did. But I was in the rooms with them there, and they were half juiced before they went on the stage. And I seen the drink they were drinking. They just drank in their room, no, at the room. And I used to say, "Cause you can't go on that stage sober. Yeah. I have to have a few drinks." Yeah. I couldn't say. I was a kid at the time. I was looking at them, they're blacking on that stage, you know. But what a session. What a session. And see, after that, they played there. And then they would have played in the Ulster Hall, the Dublers. And I would have always went to the Ulster Hall any time they came. But I used to have loads and loads of their LPs and the wee CD things that they had.
We discovered earlier that Martin has never been afraid of work, but working in Belfast in the 1960s and 70s came with its own set of dangers people wouldn't expect in today's relative peaceful society.
What happened to me was I was lifted by the British Army off a job on the Boucher Road I was working in. I was actually working in for McAlpines, first of all. And I remember working in that job one night, and I'd just left the job. But there was some fella who was working on the job, brought a gun. I don't know who he was now. And he fired shots. And I remember everybody was hemmed down. But I had actually left that job then, so I did, and went over to another job. H&J Martin, she called it. It's where the big B&Q place is. But I remember working in that job where HUD carrying the bricklayers. And we're working this day, and next thing as well is, the Brits is all over the job. I was bent down, making some... mortar for them, cement for them. I says, "Brits?" He says, "Fucking look." I turned over the wall, there's the Brits all over the place. But the foreman was with them, the man who ever was over. And next thing, the wee bricklayer from down St. James says to me, "Fuck yeah, they're coming over here, they're coming towards us." So next thing, the Brits says to me, "Mr. Flynn?" I said, "What?" He says, "Mr. Flynn?" Yeah, he says, "Who's that?" And your mom was there, the foreman. I says, "I'm well." And he says, "You have to come with us." So I started the thing. Next thing, they grabbed me. And they took me away. They lifted me and took me into Musgrave Park. There was a military wing in Musgrave Park. The hospital. Interrogated in there. Got the shit beat out of me. Batting me and had the big light and all, no, putting down on you, asking me different things about the family and stuff like that. And when you didn't answer questions, they hit you. And blah, blah, blah. And was in there for about, fuck, I don't know how many hours. But anyway, and then they transferred me from there till Castlereagh. And I was in Castlereagh for about three days. Yeah. And I got let out. But I obviously couldn't go back to that job. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But they asked me questions about the gun thing, and I hadn't a fucking clue, because they'd done it when I was a fucker, but they must have thought that I had new things like that there. And then they asked me about my family, because they knew my family were Republican, do you know what I mean, like, and stuff like that there. But I remember I couldn't go back to that job. But you know, we're doing the milk when I was younger. I always loved milk, or working on a farm, or being in a dairy.
Yeah.
And one of the fellas from Turf Lodge, Reddy Reid, says to me, "God, there's a job, there's an inside job going on thing. Do you fancy no working in the canneries. And that was right beside the village then, you see. Yeah. But see, when I was a kid, I used to go for my granny and all the old people around St. James's. There was a bridge went across the Baggy River towards Tatesy Avenue. I would always went over there every Friday for the fish and chips, you know, and used to say, oh, here's the wee Fenian come. You know, funny enough, I went there about 3 or 4 years ago, the babies in the village. I actually went in there for 3 or 4, just to see what it was like to get a fish, and I was actually telling the man inside it about the experience, and he was laughing. He says, Jesus, that's incredible, isn't it? But anyway, so I was in Kennedy, Kennedy's Milk Dairy for, I think I was only in it a week, and we're leaving it one day, me and Dickie, a fella from Glenve, Dickie, God, he died there a few years, I just can't remember his name, and another fella from Lower Andy, can't remember his name. But I remember we came out of, we left that afternoon, I think it was about 3 or 4 o'clock where we finished. And we were all walking along towards Tates Avenue. We just got across Tates Avenue looking. I was up north towards French Park Street and I seen these, the boyos, you know, standing at the corner. And I looked over towards them. I knew there was something not right. And the next thing, jumped out and says, Fenians, like out there. So I shouted to her to fucking run. Yeah. So around by this time, your man, one of them had started to fire a shot. These, what you call, like zip guns, things. So that you pull them, just, it's just like a pen and a thing.
Yeah.
They fired a shot. There were two boys away up in front of me. They run. They fired a shot, and I ducked like out there. But when I started to run again, there was one actually behind me. But he was trying to do this here at the back of my head. But however way I grappled with him, the thing went into my arm. The bullet went into my arm and thing. But I had him like a, no, like sort of way grappling him, but didn't he pull away? But see, the other two, it was long with him, they run away. And then he got up and he got, you know, thing. And that was me, so it was me.
That's
it there, aye. So I got shot, so I run around, I had to run around that way. The two boys were away. I was never the same one of the men that was with me. Never ever spoke to me after, believe it or not.
Right.
I don't know if it was because of the shag of it or what. I would have seen him along the Falls Road. He lived in Lord Anderson's town, the fella. But he became very strange after that. I think it affected him psychologically, to be honest. You know, that fella was never the same after. And I think he's dead now. I got the two of them dead now.
Right.
But I remember going round and going in and blah, 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 and the blood was coming down my arm or something like that there. And I remember a Sandry and a Brit Sandry and a thing at the Broadway thing. And this Brit run out and said, what, you in something? I says, I just got shot round the corner there, blah, 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 like that there, you know. Oh, next thing they all fucking, the whole squad of them then come out there, had me then, right, like that there, and started, no, oh, you get shot, but no, all this here, asking you questions and stuff like that. Anyway, I was brought to the hospital. They kept me in, was end up, I thought it would just put him in and out. They kept me in. The bullet had lodged, the thing of the bullet had lodged in the arm. And I remember there were some soldiers in the ward who were injured. And I remember, see to this day, I regret not fucking making a thing about her. There was a head nurse in it. And she says, and where did you get shot? And blah, blah, blah. Well, what were you doing there? Like, maybe you shouldn't have been there. And I was going like, what the fuck's this all about? You know what?
Yeah.
All. But anyway, I was in there for about a week. They kept me in for a week anyway, and they took the bullet wound out, and they wouldn't let me out in case there was something within there or whatever, so they had to keep an eye on that there. But I got out for a week anyway. So it was me going. That was me going out of Kennedy's.
Another
too.
Job
so
gone.
I couldn't go back to Kennedy's. Because what happened was, after the time, the cops came in. The cop.
Does that bell want me a cup of tea or coffee?
No, I'm all right, thanks.
You
honestly,
sure?
Aye, thanks a million.
All right.
All right, thanks. I know, I rudely turned down a cup of tea in a house in West Belfast, something I'd never advise any visitor to this country to do, no matter what part of the island you visit. But that's it for this week, but it's not the end of Martin's story. As this podcast is in its infancy, I've little data on who listens to the podcast, how long they'd like the podcast to be,
and if people would like longer stories in a full hours episode or to be split into 2 half hours. Personally, I like podcasts around 45 minutes. It's about my commute time to work on a good day. When I started out this podcast, I did make a deal with myself that any podcast over 45 minutes would be cut into 2 episodes until I'm in a position to gather feedback from you, the listener. Make sure you subscribe to download next week's episode when Martin tells us how the whole scenario at Kennedy's ended up, about being a lifelong Republican and his relationship with religion. This week's podcast is supported by Gerard O'Donnell Photography. He helps out in so many ways that it would take way too long to mention. Check out his fantastic work on gerardodonnell.ie or on Facebook, facebook.com Gerard O'Donnell Photography. Facebook.com Gerard O'Donnell Photography. He has some great scenes of Ireland and some beautiful portraits of Irish people. I'd really appreciate if you would subscribe and leave a review via iTunes, Audioboom, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Podbean, and now available on TuneIn Radio or wherever you decide to get your podcasts, because this list could go on and on. The MichaelMeets.com website is currently being developed and should be available soon, but in the meantime, you can join the conversation over on Facebook, facebook.com/MichaelMeets, facebook.com/MichaelMeets. You can also follow me on Twitter, @MichaelMeets. @MichaelMeets. Do you know someone who's a good talker and that I should meet? If so, drop me a message via Facebook or email hello@michaelmeets.com. hello@michaelmeets.com. And don't forget to tune in, download, or listen online to make sure you get to hear the rest of Martin's fascinating life story.